Welcome back to the Resilient Futures Podcast.
Welcome. My name is Todd Bridges, and I'm joined by my co-host, Alicia Helmrich. Good morning, Alicia.
Good morning, Todd.
Very happy today to be joined by Tom Smith, the Executive Director of the American Society of Civil Engineers. Hello, Tom.
Hi, good morning, Todd. Hi, Alicia.
It's great to have you here. Civil engineers are so important, the maybe unsung heroes of modern civilization, roads and bridges and water delivery systems and all sorts of infrastructure. And we're very happy to have you as our guest today to talk about the importance of civil engineering, the work of ASCE.
Todd, you must have just watched CBS Sunday Morning, because Jane Pauley used that same language. She said civil engineers are the unsung heroes of many of our nation's most important projects.
I didn't catch that show, but what can I say? It's true.
Yeah. Great minds are obviously thinking alike. So,
yes. Well, as a way of starting of this particular episode, Tom, could you please tell us the story of Tom Smith and how you came to be the executive director of ASCE?
Absolutely. Well, I've been a member of ASCE since I was in school at the University of Virginia back in the 1980s. It's ways back, I'm sorry to say, but I was involved with our student chapter there for the American Society of Civil Engineers. I actually stayed at Virginia for a master's in structural engineering and then went on to law school. And then practice law. So I was doing mostly land use and construction related litigation and processing, you know, federal, state, local land use permits, and working with, you know, obviously civil engineers. And I worked on a lot of different environmental issues as well with in association with land development. I joined ASCE as general counsel and then took on a lot of different management roles over time, and eventually was the deputy executive director. And then I guess I'm finishing up my ninth year as executive director now.
Wow. And just as a follow-up, I would have to imagine it'd be very interesting to have a law background and leading an organization of 150,000 engineer members.
Well, it's a good thing I have an engineering degree, because the law of the background is not always quite so popular, because sometimes it's at least perceived that lawyers can be an impediment to some things, although they're obviously, I say that in jest, because they're certainly very well respected by the engineering profession, and they work hand in hand together so many times. It's just that we do find it sometimes a pretty litigious world that we live in, and sometimes that can slow down projects. I'm sure I've seen that even with, some of the important environmental projects that need to be done sometimes. And even now, as we're looking at some of the investments that have been made in infrastructure, there's a concern that some of the permitting process and litigation can slow us down sometimes. But aside from that, it's been a great background for me to have. Mixing the two really is, I think, works very well. And of course, I always encourage engineers who are considering law school to strongly consider it, because I think there's a good synergy between the two.
Yeah, I'd have to add, I've persuaded myself very much so that I think more substantive interaction and collaboration between what I would say technical disciplines like science and engineering and law is necessary for us to make more progress and to accelerate progress on innovation in engineering practice. I think it's critical that we do that. So I think you're in a great position to help facilitate that.
Well, and in fact, that's kind of been the name of the game for everything we've been saying about engineering. Is, you know, it's all part of an infrastructure system, and we need to engage with professionals of all kinds. And so that's what's so important. And of course, we also believe engineers really need to be in that leadership role, because so many of the issues that we're facing as a country and as a planet involve engineering as part of the solutions. You know, they involve transportation and the environment and clean air and clean water. So we really do need to have engineers in leadership positions working with broad-based interdisciplinary teams.
On that note of diversity, we have a lot broader audience than just engineers for this podcast. So maybe we should take a step back real quick. And Tom, could you please tell us a little bit more about the organization and mission of the American Society of Civil Engineers?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. ASCE is a nonprofit. So we're a 501c3 that's focused on science and education. We were actually, believe it or not, formed back in 1852. And as Todd referenced, we've got 150,000 plus members in 177 countries. So where we started with 12 people in New York City back in the 1800s, it's now, you know, all over the world. And so we've got over 400 student chapters. We've got sections and branches throughout the country and throughout the world. So we're connecting civil engineers all over the world, but we're also connecting them with other professionals. In this organization, we're sort of kind of a matrix organization. So you can see we're divided up kind of geographically with sections and branches, both in the U.S. and abroad. But then also we're, you know, you can divide us sort of vertically and look at the different technical disciplines. So that includes, you know, transportation, structures, coasts, oceans, ports, and rivers, you know, architectural engineering, so geotechnical engineering, all those different technical disciplines. And really what civil engineers are focused on is really all of our infrastructure. Many know ASCE because we also do advocacy. We have an office in Washington, D.C. Our headquarters is in Reston, Virginia. But the folks that are doing advocacy, one of the things we're known for is this report card on America's infrastructure. So we look at the 17 categories of infrastructure and we evaluate them with a simple grade, just like you'd see on your, you know, on your in grade school. And that way the public can really understand the state of our infrastructure. And really the work that we do cuts across all elements of our infrastructure. So civil engineering and ASCE has got a large depth. You know, we've got incredible, you know, technical expertise in each of these specialized areas, but also a wide breadth that connects all these different disciplines within civil engineering. So it's a very deep and broad organization that spans the entire world.
Tom, continuing then along those lines, there are many big societal challenges that relate to infrastructure and what civil engineers do. You referenced the report card. There are a lot of very poor grades on record for a long period of time. But on the flip side of the coin, there are a lot of opportunities, I would say, value that can be created through advancing engineering practice that's relevant to ASCE and its membership and their practice. Can you tell us how ASCE is prioritizing and positioning itself to address these challenges and the opportunities?
Yeah, absolutely. Great point. There's a lot of opportunity out there, and we're really trying to change the mindset, is starting thinking about not just the current generation, but looking at future generations and looking at, you know, the environmental considerations. And that's always been part of civil engineering, of course, but we're really enhancing our focus on that. A couple of years ago, we did a comprehensive overhaul of our code of ethics with a heavy focus on sustainability and resilience and prioritizing environmental considerations. We now, just last year, have a new strategic plan, and that includes a new vision statement for ASCE. That vision is engineered and natural systems working in harmony for the benefit of humanity. So Todd, I know, you know, Alicia, I know that resonates with y'all when you see the engineered and natural systems, because we recognize how important that is. Then with a mission that talks about advancing, you know, obviously public health, safety, and welfare. So we're really heavily focused on sustainability. And, you know, when we look at our strategic objectives, that includes championing integration of sustainability and equity and infrastructure solutions, being the authoritative source for adaptation of infrastructure to the changing global climate, and accelerating infrastructure's transition into the future. So we have a variety of different committees working on this. With the advocacy that we've done, you've seen the heavy investment in our infrastructure, the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, the CHIPS and Science Act, and the Inflation Reduction Act. And now we're really trying to make sure that we're working with the administration and all the different agencies so that money that's being invested is going to be done in a way that is sustainable and resilient and that is forward-looking. And so we're focusing on this at every level, like workforce development, making sure that engineers, both we're actually working, you know, obviously with engineers throughout their careers, but in the academic sector, we're working with engineers and, you know, students and at universities with the curriculum. And then also we're trying to reach out to engineers and future engineers in the K through 12 sector and letting them know what engineers do. We've got a new IMAX film that's coming out. It's called Cities of the Future, and it's heavily researched. And so we looked at the key trends that we saw that are facing the planet and the future. And we said, we narrowed them down to 6 specifically, started with 125. And then we said, you know, what do we see the cities looking like evolving over time? And then we started to design those cities. We have a mega city with, you know, we're talking about a city with 50 million people in it that we look at in the year 2070. And we have a virtual reality platform so you can immerse yourself into that city. And now we're coming out with an IMAX film so you can further immerse yourself into that city. And that'll be released formally during Engineers Week in 2024. So we're trying to make sure that the public really understands the importance of engineering and the importance of sustainability and resilience. Because every time we use civil engineering, I don't even know if we really need the terms resilience and sustainability anymore, because I think that it's just inherent in civil engineering. Obviously, we do need those terms. We talk about them a lot, but I do think it's sort of synonymous with our profession, and we're driving it into everything we do. So as I said, it's in our code of ethics. It's in our strategic plan. We've got a variety of committees working on it. We're pushing standards in this area. New standards, including one that we just adopted within the last week or so, and that's just gone out, just started to be published on sustainable infrastructure, called ASCE 73. So there's just a lot of opportunity. I think it's an exciting time, actually, for civil engineering and to be a civil engineer, because we have some major challenges. You know, you only need to look at the Sustainable Development Goals and see all the things that we're facing, the challenges that we're facing, and look at the extreme weather conditions that we're seeing. But it's also a huge opportunity for us to take those challenges on. And nature-based solutions, I think, is as you've been working so hard to advocate for so long, we're realizing how important that is, and harmonizing with nature, because recognizing that the environment is one of the key stakeholders, and it's actually recognized as a stakeholder in our code of ethics.
Yeah. I impressed by several things that you just said, Tom, but really this idea of an IMAX movie coming out. I think, you know, one of the things that we need to facilitate across many different communities is to help us become creative problem solvers, you know, to stimulate the creative energies and pursuits that are going to allow us to address challenges and opportunities. And it's great to see ASCE reaching in those kinds of directions to stimulate creativity across its membership and to facilitate new members, perhaps, that could help in that enterprise.
Exactly. That's what it's really the heavy focus on, thinking differently. Throwing out what we did in the past and starting with a blank slate. We've got, by the way, a lot of wonderful infrastructure, but, you know, much of it is 50, 75, 100 years old, and some of it needs to be readapted, and some of it, you know, and some things we need to completely change. And so it's a great time. We're working with different organizations. We have a new cooperative agreement with NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, recognizing that, and we've done some publications with them recently, recognizing the importance of connecting the science with the engineering. And so that's another thing that we've been really focused on. We're working with FEMA, we're working with NIST to make sure, of course, the Corps of Engineers, we've always had a great relationship with Todd, and and to make sure that we're connecting again a lot of the science and the climate and the work that's been done with our standards. And so that's been a heavy focus as of late, is to make sure that, and so we're, you know, we're working with those agencies to make sure that our standards are future looking and incorporating sustainability, making sure they're climate ready and resilient.
It's incredibly fascinating to hear, like, everything that ASCE is doing to prepare for future generations of infrastructure needs and really focusing in on the sustainability and resilience topics. And obviously, the name of this podcast is Resilient Futures. We're focused on all the themes around resilience. And so knowing that ASCE was able to position themselves to have this forward thinkingness, to think differently about sustainability and resilience, have this advocation as well as training, I guess I'm thinking, how would you encourage other organizations to kind of be thinking in this mindset to promote resilience in practice today or in the next coming years?
Yeah, you know, there are a variety of, there's so much information out there now. And one of the things we've done is we just recently published something called Pathways to Resilient Communities, and that's infrastructure design for the environmental hazards in your region. And so we've tried to compile a lot of different codes and standards that we have published to make sure that, you know, you can figure out how do you address the different hazards that we see. And that could be seismic, wind, tornado. We have actually a brand new tornado standard within ASC 7, our minimum design load standard. Snow, ice, flood, rain, tsunamis, fire. So we have all these different challenges that we face, and we need to make sure that all the different jurisdictions out there are aware of these resources so they can incorporate them into their local codes and make sure that when we have disasters, we're building back in a way that's going to be resilient and sustainable for the future and not just doing the same things we did in the past. So part of this is making sure that we educate people, and it's obviously not just engineers. I mean, we're spending a lot of time educating engineers, but educating, you know, policymakers, federal, state, local officials. We work closely with the American Public Works Association. In fact, we're doing a media roadshow with them right now where we've been sending people around to kind of highlight some of the incredible infrastructure projects. Like we were just down at the Able pump station in Dallas last month. We were down at the Shed, a train station in Richmond earlier this year. And we were out at the Gateway Bridge at Long Beach, Port of Long Beach late last year, showing how this infrastructure works, the benefits it provides, how it makes us more resilient and prepares us for the future, how we can invest in our infrastructure and save money in the long term, because we also know that when we don't invest in infrastructure, we pay this hidden tax that it costs us, because it costs us money when we don't invest in resilient infrastructure. We then have to go back and rebuild things. So we're better off doing it right the first time. And that means putting the best technology and engineering that we have and making sure we're educating everybody on the things that we can do. Because many of them are nature-based. We've got lots of nature-based solutions.
Yeah, having those innovative solutions and like nature-based solutions in some kind of standards and manuals, a lot of conversations that I've had with practitioners is they struggle to get more of these like experimental infrastructures on the ground because they don't know how to design it for the space that they're in. And so they ask for like, can we have some kind of playbook? Is there a handbook that can help us so that we can take this to the person who's making the decision and we can say, see, look, this is codified. There is a way that this could work. So one, we'll make sure to put a link into the description of this podcast to where all those different handbook resources are on the ASC website. But on that note of like excitement that you're bringing up that you're seeing in resilience, I guess, is there a particular example or something that ASCE is doing within the resilience space that just makes you particularly excited about the work that you're seeing that's being done that you'd like to take a moment to brag about?
Well, I don't know where to start with things that I'm excited about. You know, we of course, several years ago, I guess we're back in 2010, we teamed up with the American Council of Engineering Companies and the American Public Works Association and created this Envision rating tool. And we worked with the Harvard Zofnis Program through the Institute for Sustainable Infrastructure, which I know y'all are familiar with. And it's got great criteria that are being applied to projects all over the world, including a whole, whole section just on the natural world that focuses on siting and conservation and ecology. So I think we've got a framework in place. We're now rolling out this new standard, ASC 73 on sustainable infrastructure, that has just come out within the last 2 weeks. And so that runs parallel to this Envision rating tool. And so it's a pretty high level document. It's a framework to start building on. We'll be working on the next iteration of it almost immediately. But there's so many, but there's so many examples of things that we can do. Next, just in a couple of weeks, we're going to put on a conference in Arlington. It's called Inspire. You may have heard about it, but it had hundreds and hundreds of abstracts that were submitted. And there are just many examples within this. I'm just looking at some of the sessions. Ecologically engineered solutions for resilient port infrastructure, incorporating sea level rise in coastal infrastructure design, designing salt marsh landscapes for flood protection, life cycle considerations for Swan Island and the Chesapeake Bay, trails as resilient infrastructure, assessing nature-based coastal flood risk management measures in back bay environments. There's just lots of examples. Now, one of the tours they're going to be doing is the AGU, the Association of Geophysical Union. And they've got that net zero building in Washington, D.C. that kind of taps into the sewer lines for heating and cooling. And that's something that was one, kind of a first of its kind there. Here at ASC, I'm looking out at our parking lot right now. We redid our parking lot to incorporate part of it's asphalt. I mean, we're on a 5-acre lot. We reduced the number of parking spaces, but the asphalt we put down is mixed with crushed tires. Then we put in permeable pavements, two different types of permeable pavements, and we added a couple of bioretention facilities, one called Filterra and one called Focal Point. So we're capturing the water that's coming off our parking lot. We're treating it with nature-based solutions. More of it's being retained on our site, less of it's going off the site, and what's going off the site is cleaner. That's going to go into Colvin Run, into the Potomac River, into the Chesapeake Bay, ultimately into the Atlantic Ocean. So there's a small example that we're doing just here at our headquarters to kind of walk the talk on sustainability and nature-based solutions to make sure that we're practicing what we preach. But there are just many different examples like this. And, you know, some of this is complicated. We still have, you know, combined sewer overflow that goes into many of our rivers in the country. But projects like this can help to address that. And some of them need to be larger scale, like some large tunnels like we're drilling right now under the Potomac River. And DC Water has done a number of those as well. That's important to protect the quality of our rivers. So there's a lot of really good examples out there. And we just need to make sure that we're sharing them. That's why we're running this Inspire conference. There are just dozens and dozens of sessions. I was shocked. I gave you a couple of examples, but there's just a long, long list of sessions that go on focused on all on sustainable solutions and resilient solutions, many of them nature-based. So there's a lot of really good examples out there. I just think we got to get them out there more. And that's why I appreciate the podcast that you all are doing.
Well, communication is so important in this space. There are clearly aspects of resilience and sustainability that challenge us because of the need to think really long term. People have difficulty thinking, you know, maybe where lunch is going to come from today, let alone kind of thinking about, well, what's this project I'm working on right now going to look like after I'm gone? You know, decades into the future. And those are the kind of perspectives that we have to have in order to really embrace fully the concepts of resilience and sustainability. And I believe events like the Inspire conference and others where we can share with each other from different perspectives across the community are so helpful for us to embody this, if you will, long-term system scale thinking that's so critical to true resilience or achieving that.
Yes, I couldn't agree more, Todd. I think you're exactly right. And I think it is a little bit of a different mindset. I mean, but it's something I think we're all obligated to do. I mean, it's ethically, morally, it's, you know, we need to think about future generations. And you're looking at your kids and your grandchildren and their grandkids and grandchildren, et cetera, et cetera. So we really need to be thinking about, you know, the future. So it's an important mindset that we need to have. And then, of course, the ecology and looking at, the way that the Earth works. I mean, there's a lot to be learned from a system that's been around for millions of years and start to work with it and not against it. And that's a key consideration that we're trying to make sure that we better understand how all of these different ecological systems work and how we can integrate and harmonize with them and not work against them and fight them.
Yeah. You definitely knew that you were going to be asked a question or so about nature-based solutions. And I appreciate you bringing that up. And maybe if I could just kind of focus that from what is your outlook on implementing nature-based solutions? Because we'd have to recognize that there are tension points here. Certainly nature-based solutions, if you look back in the 20th century, you know, they were there, but I wouldn't say they kind of dominated or they were maybe as present or as common as we would like to see them be in the remainder of the 21st century. And there are some challenges that we need to address. There's some tools and methods that we need to produce and distribute. But what is your outlook in respect to nature-based solutions in the context of ASE and civil engineers?
Well, I think in many ways, we're seeing more extreme weather conditions. That's just a fact. And obviously, we're spending a lot more money responding to weather conditions. There's everyone knows the NOAA data that talks about the billion-dollar storms. And this year, we've already had 24 billion-dollar storms, or not storms, but the weather events. And so we really don't have a choice but to start figuring out how to better integrate with nature, because we want to make sure that we're minimizing some of these costs. So we're looking at things like, when we looked at our six trends, we looked at our alternative energy. We recognize how important that is for a variety of reasons. I mean, it's good for clean air. It's good for, we talk about climate issues, but it just makes sense to use an energy source that's renewable. So that is one of the key trends that we looked at with our Future World Vision project. And there are many, of course, nature-based solutions. I mean, wind and solar really makes sense. And obviously, we also look at things like nuclear, which is carbon-free, although it's not renewable, but nevertheless an important source as well. We look at autonomous vehicles, climate change, smart cities, high-tech construction, and policy and funding. Those are the six trends we looked at with this Future World Vision project. But nature-based solutions, I think, are going to be key to our future. And of course, there are just many examples of how we can do it effectively and efficiently. And many times, we can do it in a way that saves money and saves us over the long term. I look at also some things we've been doing, like DC Water, the things they've done with human waste, and using that to generate energy with methane, and then using that to create fertilizer. I think they have something called Bloom, and that's not unusual to look through that process. And there are things that we can do. Again, that's a natural system. You're looking at human waste that we can utilize for both energy and fertilizer. That's a great example. And then, as I mentioned, like AGU tapping into the sewer line and using that for energy, so for heating and cooling. That's another great example. So there are many things that we can do, and there's a lot of, we got great minds, of course, in this country and the engineering community, and we want to tap some more people, get people excited about engineering, and come up with the next great solution, because there's a lot more out there. But we've got to get everybody focused on this, and again, that's why I thank you for bringing attention to it with your podcast.
Well, I just an add-on to your comment. I'm personally so encouraged by the level of excitement and interest and activity within civil engineering and within ASCE on the topic of nature-based solutions. I think it's evident to many, certainly myself, that this transition from an approach that focuses on trying to control and conquer nature to an approach that is seeking opportunities to partner with nature makes sense in the long term. So I really appreciate what ASE is doing in this and what you had to say, Tom. It's great.
Yeah, and thank you. And I know, you've been an advocate of this for many years. And part of this is also making sure that we're engaging, non-engineers and attracting the next generation of engineers. So, I know we've talked a little bit about education before as well. And one of the things we've been doing right now, so we do the civil engineering program criteria. We're responsible for that, for the accreditations that are done for university programs. And we have proposed some new criteria that incorporates the principles of sustainability, risk, and resilience, and diversity, and equity, and inclusion. And we talk a lot about ethics, of course, into the program criteria. And those should be effective for the 2024 to 2025 accreditation cycle that begins in July of 24. And we've just gone through a public comment period there. So we're working on the formal education process. We're working on tools. When we did a film several years ago called Dream Big, it's an IMAX film that we pushed in, that actually played in theaters all around the world. And it had toolkits, educational toolkits and lesson plans. And we sent that out to every school in the country, 110,000 schools, and with a DVD. And so that was to get folks, excited about engineering and the impact that you can have and solving as creative problem solvers, as you referenced earlier, and to try to solve some of these issues that we face as a planet. So we're doing a lot. We need to do a lot more to get people excited about this and appreciate your raising that.
So on that note of education, if you had a message to young people who are considering civil engineering as a potential career path, what would that be?
Yeah, well, I can't think of any profession that's going to have more impact on the future of the planet, you know, than engineering. And obviously, I'm a particular proponent of civil engineering as having an influence and impact on solving the world's issues. I look at the Sustainable Development Goals, and while some of them very clearly involve civil engineering, whether they deal with smart cities or, you know, infrastructure or clean water, even things like food for the poor, equity, I mean, all those issues require engineering at some level. So I think if you really want to have an impact and make a difference, this is definitely an important profession for you. And I do think within engineering, there are so many different things that you can do to have an impact. Just within civil engineering, you know, we've got people who are designing buildings, we've got people who are designing roads and bridges, we've got people who are designing, wastewater treatment facilities, drinking water facilities, dams, levees, you know, at hospitals, schools, all of those things. And all of that has to be done in a way that is going to be sustainable and resilient. And we have to evaluate the risks that we're facing and figure out how best to mitigate those risks. And that means, you know, what's the likelihood of an issue? And then what are the consequences of an issue? And so we're constantly evaluating that and trying to figure out then how do we solve it? And so many of those solutions, they all require some integration with nature. I mean, we're always, everything we do involves integrating with nature at some level. I mean, we're part of a much larger ecosystem here, and we're just one small part of it. And so we have to make sure that we're good stewards of the environment and finding solutions. And so if you're looking for a profession, I think this is certainly an important one. One other thing I'm doing that involves nature-based solutions is I sit on the board of the National Park Trust, which acquires properties for the National Park Service. So we help to facilitate that process. And I chair the Lands Committee. And sometimes that involves, you know, acquiring properties that will not be developed. So, for instance, if you saw what's happening down in Cape Hatteras, there's a number of houses down there that have been sort of falling into the ocean. And so and some of those directly adjoin the Cape Hatteras National Seashore. So you got a national park. And so we actually just recently helped to do appraisals to acquire two properties that the Park Service just recently acquired because it ends up being more advantageous even for the park and the taxpayer to do it this way. That also gives access from the park to the Atlantic Ocean while also solving some of the issues with septic systems that are creating problems, or houses that fall into that into the ocean that have, you know, damaging ecological impacts as well. So that's another solution. Sometimes it does involve retreating and just not building in certain locations and using them for other purposes.
One of the trends I think I'm detecting, and something that I believe is also motivating to younger people, is this broadening that's happening in respect to engineering in the sense of its interdisciplinarity. Mm-hmm. That the kinds of solutions and the kinds of projects that the future needs are going to require engineers and scientists and ecologists and social scientists and others to come together and to work together in these systems. And I think that's very positive. It's very exciting. It also presents some challenges because those disciplines have to understand each other. There has to be some kind of language that they can use with each other. I'm interested in your thoughts about that.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I couldn't agree more. Unfortunately, a lot of times what facilitates that is an emergency. You know, we have a disaster, we have a and all of a sudden the community comes together, necessarily so, to respond, to rebuild, And so that's where you see, everybody come together. And what we really need to do is come together before there's an emergency. We need to be proactive and not reactive. And that's so often what happens. And as you said, I think that we need to be proactive interdisciplinary way that brings the entire community, professional community and community together and solving these problems before they happen and making sure that we're prepared for that.
Including bringing the community themselves into the equation. It's something that we've touched on perhaps in our discussion here, but it presents a challenge, I suppose, to say government agencies, but also the private sectors. How do we meaningfully and substantively engage with the communities where our projects, if you will, are going to be, where they're physically located, and those people who are going to be deriving, the benefits and dealing maybe with some of the issues that those projects may present.
Yeah, and I think it's making sure everybody understands, we're all on the same team. We're trying to improve and enhance these communities, and we're also trying to improve them for those communities' children and grandchildren. So we're trying to make sure we do this over the long term. So everyone's got, we should have all the same interests involved here, which is how do we build in a way that is compatible and harmonizes with the natural environment and looks out for future generations in a way that's going to be sustainable and resilient for the long-term prosperity of humanity and the earth and all the different, systems, ecological systems that exist on this planet.
Well, that's a great way to end. I'm just going to pause here and say, but Tom, is there something that, or Alicia, is there something that else you want to bring up that we haven't covered here that we could just introduce in this final segment?
Okay, yeah, I will mention, if folks are interested, there is upcoming conference that's called Inspire. It's going to be in Arlington, Virginia. It's November 16th through 18th. The tagline is Infrastructure Innovation and Adaptation for a Sustainable and Resilient World. There are a variety of different tours, hundreds and hundreds of people that were involved in putting on this conference, and there are hundreds of sessions that are taking place. And abstracts that were submitted. I gave you a couple of examples, but there's just many sessions. There's seven different tracks going on at the same time. So it's kind of heartwarming to see the focus from the engineering and beyond community on ways that we can address the issues we've been talking about here. There's a lot of things we're doing within ASCE with our standards, with our education webinars, seminars, and things that we're doing at the formal education process, things we're trying to do to attract engineers into this profession. But it requires all hands on deck. And again, this is not just engineers of the hands that we need. We need all professionals and all communities to engage in this. And certainly we want to make sure that engineers are in a leadership role because they're at the heart of many of these issues. Again, working hand in hand with our colleagues.
Super excited for the ASCE Inspire conference. I'll be there in a couple weeks. I know we have a strong showing from UGA coming to that.
Good. Okay.
We'll be there mingling about and helping push this topic forward.
Wow. Well, good. Well, thank you. That's great. I'm not surprised. A lot of the work that you all have done is probably being showcased at this conference too. So anyway, we appreciate that.
Yes. And we appreciate you, Tom. Thank you so much for coming on to our podcast to talk a little bit about your own story and ASC's mission at large regarding resilience, nature-based solutions as well, and how we're integrating all of that into civil engineering and inspiring future generations to help create more sustainable and resilient infrastructure that will last for their future generations as well. So thank you so much.
Absolutely, my pleasure, thank you.
Let me say thank you, Tom, too, for your forward looking leadership and ASCE, and for all the energy that you're bringing to the organization and to today's conversation on the podcast. Thank you.
The Resilient Futures Podcast is an outreach effort brought to you by the University of Georgia's Institute for Resilient Infrastructure Systems, or IRIS. To learn more, please visit iris.uga.edu/resilient-future-podcast. If you have any questions, comments, feedback, or ideas for future episodes, please find us on Twitter at rfuturespod or contact our production manager, Sarah, at sarah.bukleitner@uga.edu. If you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe and drop a review wherever you get your podcasts. See you next time.